You're listening to Polycast, an official podcast of Bolden Civilization site. We're talking about Civilization IV, War of Two Cities. I'm Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q, and I'm joined by Tony Keel, who goes by Garrett Zizaka.
And we're also joined by...
Rick Raymer. I'm the VP of Product Development at Oasis Mobile.
Paul Nerath, I'm the Creative Director at Floodgate Entertainment.
Scott Kimball, game designer at Floodgate Entertainment.
And I'm Jason Rice, I'm a producer at Oasis Mobile.
On behalf of us here at Polycast and a poll from Civilization site, we would like to thank one of Oasis's product managers, Joe Sewell. Hopefully I'm pronouncing his last name properly, but he's not here to correct me. For arranging this interview. So, Rick joined the company in April 2005 and has worked in the gaming industry for more than a decade. According to a biography of you on Wikipedia, one of the other companies you have worked for is Hasbro Interactive, which for a time owned the Civilization franchise. Rick, what are your responsibilities at Oasis and what is your involvement in Civilization IV, War of Two Cities?
My involvement with War of Two Cities has essentially been as an executive producer. I do all of the milestone approvals and make sure that these great guys at Floodgate get paid. That pretty much sums it up. Occasionally, I'll have some feedback for these guys, and they can choose to listen to me or not.
Rick keeps us on our toes.
Yeah. And at Oasis, I'm the VP of Product Development, which essentially I run teams of producers and designers and artists. And our project managers. So pretty much everything except for the programming.
So, Rick, if I want to get paid, I go to you?
Correct.
I'm getting in line behind you, Dan.
We'll talk later.
Paul is a 20-year veteran of the interactive entertainment industry. In 1990, he co-founded and served as creative director on what became to be known as Looking Glass Studios. He is now creative director of Floodgate, overseeing all design, development, and research efforts of the company. Paul, what is your involvement in Civ 4, War of Two Cities?
Mostly is to get beat by our lead designer, Scott, playing the game, who he can do handling. Besides that, you know, in the creative director role, I throw my two cents in about design, do a lot of brainstorming. Try to, when I feel like it, raise some good questions or what might be good questions about design decisions being made or features that we're implementing. So I prod a lot, I poke a lot, goal of trying to, you know, make sure we're making the best game possible.
That's cool.
Keeps me busy. Keeps me out of trouble.
Oh, they're coming for you.
Yeah, that's right. The fire station and police station are about a block away from our the Floodgate offices, so we get a lot of action going by our front door.
Nice.
Scott Kimball is a designer at Floodgate and lead designer on Civilization IV, War of Two Cities. So, Scott, what does that mean?
That means I do everything except code. And get no credit. No. I was basically responsible for, once we had the concept down, which was a iterative process for the whole team, I was responsible for taking the idea and putting it on paper, designing the various mechanics, and then once production started, sitting on the idea and making tweaks and coming up with proposed changes and all sorts of stuff.
I'm looking for the question on my list.
Well, you won't find a question for Jason on the list because until we started this conference, I didn't know we were going to have Jason.
Oh, okay.
Not that that's bad or anything, Jason. You don't have to leave.
No, we like you. Don't go.
I'm just here because I know how to work Audacity.
Exactly. Oh, that's funny.
I'm at Oasis Mobile. I'm a producer there, which means that I'm responsible for the creative vision of a project from the time we start. Pre-production, the conceptual phase, all the way through until we hit Gold Master, and the game is ready to go in the porting and go out to the various carriers.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I have to work with Rick, you know, but I get to work in the video game industry, so it's a pretty good trade-off. It's a trade-off there, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a steep trade-off.
I imagine you're busy because there's so many carriers.
That, yes.
That is one of the reasons why I'm busy. But, you know, considering that we're a publisher of mobile games, which you can check out our games at oasismobile.com, by the way, plug. Since we're a publisher, you know, we deal with a lot of different products at once, so I have several projects that I manage over the course of the time, whether those are internal projects that our own developers are working for, or whether when we work with these great guys, like the guys from Floodgate, to develop games. So I keep myself busy with a lot of different projects.
You keep yourself busy with lots of different projects. Would that include the Hooters calendar and the Hooters calendar girl Tubin?
One of the other producers handles those titles.
But you generally have me to blame for that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Rick's the mastermind behind the Hooters properties. He's a big fan of Hooters.
Oh, boy.
Does he know how to work Audacity? No, I'm just kidding. Any of you, all of you, what was the impetus for Civilization IV War of Two Cities, and how did its development then come about, including the place of Civilization IV in the title?
We're all big fans of Sid's work, and have enjoyed his games for many, many years. We at Oasis had a few of our developers that had actually worked on some of the early Sid titles, specifically the Pirates game. So we acquired three of the Sid Meier brands, Pirates and Railroad Tycoon and Civilization. So when we first started with this particular game, you know, we have a lot of challenges in the mobile space, not the least of which is making games that fit on these handsets that really don't have a lot of processing power and memory and all the constraints that are associated with that. In addition to that, talking about playing a game on a mobile phone, you're not talking about something that you want to sit down and play for hours and hours necessarily. You want to have quick, casual gameplay sessions. So that was pretty much where we had started from when we sat down and we discussed this particular game.
Scott and I are likewise big fans of the Civilization series. Played it from the get-go. And distilling down that strategic scope of, you know, Civilization through the ages onto a cell phone was the challenge in trying to get that experience and bite-sized experience. So we really try to focus on kind of what were the essential elements that we could carry across and give you good gameplay and that experience, you know, what would be a 5-10 minute battles. Part of that thinking informed us to do essentially War of Two Cities, where we represented the two civilizations. It's just two city states battling each other across the battlefield. And then all of the gameplay dynamics sort of came out of that ended up working pretty well.
In an official description of the game, you provided both us at Apollotan and fellow fan site Civilization Fanatic Center, War of Two Cities is described as departing from past iterations on mobile phones. What can you tell us of these Civ on phone efforts, and how does War of Two Cities differ?
So, in the past, there had been one other Civ game that had been done on the phone, and frankly, in the early days of mobile game development, and I'm sure others might argue still currently, there wasn't a lot of time and money, frankly, that was spent on the first Civ game, and it was really not a very good game at all. In fact, it really didn't make it onto any of the major carriers. So this game, we specifically wanted to work with Floodgate because they really have a presence in the mobile game community as being one of the top developers. And so we really saw Civilization as being a flagship product for us. So we wanted to make sure that we were pairing the game with a developer who would be up to the task, knows the platform, and, you know, that would really do the game justice. Specifically, Paul has been working in the industry for a long time and really understands, you know, strategy games and the type of game that we envisioned this being. We knew that we could find the expertise here.
Cool.
Which is new, we're suckers for Civilization.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Also, in the first sentence of the official description, you mentioned pulling the franchise, quote, into the exciting arena of side-scrolling real-time strategy, unquote. What is side-scrolling real-time strategy, and how will WOTC use it? Why introduce real-time mechanics to Civ at all?
The side-scrolling mechanic that we use in Civ is one where the two warring cities are on either side of a map, of a board. Board would be wider than the phone screen itself, so you'd have to scroll across. And the two cities are building armies to fight each other. And they're fighting over resources that are on the map, such as mines, which provide more production resources, or farms, which provide more food. And the battle takes place on a side-scrolling view, so that's going back and forth, left and right across the board, as the two sides duel with each other. We thought that this approach to the game would both allow for a pretty good strategy, but also not only fit on a phone, which was a major concern, but also be accessible to the casual users that play cell phone games.
Well, on that, one of the things that Scott came up with, the design feature, is really cool, is you have this flag that represents the borders between the two warring city-states. It's like on a pole, and one half of the flag is blue, for the blue-colored city-state, and the other is red, represents two city-states. And that flag moves across the battlefield. It's pushed back and forth depending on which side is currently has an advantage or gaining more territory. And it's a very simple concept, but it sort of elegantly encapsulates a lot of what's in the PC game, where you're taking over territory and gaining those resources. So on a side scroller, if you move that flag towards your opponent's city state, every yard of terrain that you gain is your terrain. If there are any mines or farms in that, they become your resources and they gain to you. And so it's just a nice way to encapsulate that concept. It's also, you mentioned real time, which is important as to make this a fun game for mobile players in what would be maybe a 5-minute session. We decided not to go turn-based, which almost always lends itself to a longer-term gameplay style. So we had to translate sort of all the turn-based mechanics of the original game to be real-time, which I think, you know, worked out quite well, but obviously it's a little different experience then.
But there's all the decisions you make in a typical SID game, you try to incorporate into this game. When do you upgrade your tech, or how do you upgrade your tech? When do you build your units? When do you go on the offense? When do you simply want to play defense? All those stuff. So,
you know, going out, grabbing resources.
The game's official description refers to players expanding their borders. Is their structure comparable to Civ 3 and Civ 4? Oh, and do cities have fat crosses for the workable terrain, such as in Civilization 4 and up to that point, for example, you'll have 20 tiles, potentially, that you could work?
You have to remember that this game is not top-down or pseudo-isometric like Civ 3 or Civ 4, so we don't have the concept of tiles. What we do have is, on the side-scrolling view of the game, like we said earlier, there are mines and farms laid out that you can see, and there's a border between the two cities. The player can move this border back and forth towards his enemy city, basically expanding his own territory, and as the border moves across these farms and mines, he gains access to those resources. So the border typically starts off halfway between the two cities, and then the actions of the player move it one way or the other.
So if you capture a farm, then that is now part of your border. You've expanded your border as long as you continue to control that tile. Or that space. Shouldn't say tile.
Shouldn't say tile, but that space, right.
The name implies that this Civ is about a battle of two cities, but the official description talks about taking over, quote, one city after the next and using one's, quote, main city as a staging ground. As Jan Fleem Lemetyanin asks, is capturing one or is it more enemy cities the only way to win? Further, can you as a player, in fact, found more than one city, and can cities be raised? Well, we partially answered that a little.
Yeah, well, the game is played over a series of levels, with each level pitting you against a new city.
Ah.
So the game starts with you fighting various cities of Rome, culminating in you fighting Rome itself. And then it moves on to the next level, which would be you fighting against medieval cities or against Russia or against some other countries. So as I said, each level is you fighting one city. You fight until you basically take that city, get all the rewards for doing so, and then you go on to fight the next city.
And you end up each phase or era that you fight through, you culminate with you taking the capital city of that era.
So, as I said, you start off fighting basically the cities of Rome, culminating in you taking over Rome, and then you fight the various cities of medieval Russia, culminating in you taking Moscow, and so forth.
The technology builds up through all these various countries and cities on your side, so it progresses as the game goes?
That's correct. After each level of the game, you get to pick a new technology, and you have different technology trees in the game, and how you progress on each tree is up to you, and it sort of just defines your strategy over the course of the whole game.
And so when you play your campaign, it's not going to be the same. You might play where you're always building up your, one particular kind of technology. Another player might pick another technology. Another player might try to do a nice mix between technologies.
Ah, so if in a particular level, if you choose one technology and another player chooses another technology, does that then mean that the technologies that you didn't choose in one level, you can't get again in another level, or?
Well, the technology is set up like a tree, like I said, and after each level, you get to pick sort of the next advance on any of the trees. We have three trees. One's sort of a military tech, one's an industrial tech, and one's more of a agricultural tech. In each tree, there are 10 technologies that you advance to. And so after one level, you might pick the first tech in the military tech, which would be spearmen. After the next level, you could pick the next advancement in military, or you could take the first one in agriculture, which might be farming. So how you advance is completely up to you, and it can change from game to game.
You only get so many advancements through the campaign.
Well, that's right. During the course of the entire game, you'll only have so many choices. You're not going to be able to get everything you want during the game. So sort of a give or take for each tech you pick.
Oh, okay, right, because in one of the screenshots that you released, it reads, for example, Military 2 with the option of Rose, Mining, and Mathematics. Would you say then that this is similar to Rise of Nations, which is familiar with that, which has, like, military, science, and commerce, and civic research fields, where, as you said, you could really emphasize one or more technology tree, whereas the other one is still a bit behind, or other ones are still a bit behind?
That's right, that's right. So if you want to be a really militaristic society, you can stick to the military tree and gain all those advantages, but your industrial capabilities or your infrastructure capabilities won't be as strong as someone else.
The goal in progressing from one level to another, as you said, is culminating in capturing the capital city of a civilization. So as a general strategy, then, is there more of an emphasis on military technologies? If you just continued pushing your way through military technologies, you kind of ignored the other two. What would that do to you if you were too much of a warmonger, perhaps?
Well, the game is set up as the two cities are in conflict. So we have no sense of negotiating a peace or coming to terms. You're going to fight and someone's going to win. How you win is determined by your strategy. And part of your strategy is the technology you pick. In the campaign, there are 20 levels. So at most, you will get 20 technologies. You do the math, you'll realize that you're not going to get all the technologies. You can fill out one full tree, you can fill out almost two full trees, but you're not going to get everything. So if you pick, for instance, roads as one of your technologies, your units, your armies, will move a little faster than your opponents. If you pick masonry as one of your technologies, your city's walls will resist more attacks by your opponent's armies. So the technology sort of emphasizes the strategy you want to take in the game.
There's also a bit of an interplay because on a particular tree, the most advanced techs are fairly powerful. They're more powerful. And so you do have a real trade-off. If you want to be balanced across two or three techs, you're never going to get into the very upper echelons of any one tech tree. Now, that gives you nice balance and diversity, but you have to trade that off. If you want to be a specialist, you get up to the 10th level tech, and you're very powerful in one regard. So it's sort of that level of, if you want to be a specialist or you want to be a jack-of-all-trades or somewhere in between.
And as you said, then that goes into replayability. So if you want to try them all out, as you said, there are hundreds of different possible combinations here. So hope you got a good battery on that cell phone there, or it's plugged in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We try to keep a balance between the different three branches of technology to allow players to approach the game with different tactics and different, ultimately how they're going to win the game. So there is no, at least if we did it right, there's no one particular tree that gives you any really advantage over another. It just means you have to play the game differently to win it. So let's say you work on a lot of infrastructure advances. Your troops may not be all that strong in terms of their ability to do damage, but your walls are going to be strong, and your units can move fast, and they can regenerate their health, and they'll have a variety of other advantages that can be very decisive. And part of the interest is you're playing against AI players, and they may use different strategies. You can see what your opponent has. Every city-state has three branches of technology are visually represented in the way the city gets built up. So over time, you can see the military is very strong to your opponent. You'll see their military, military tower will get, you know, bigger and mightier looking. And so you can see what kind of opponent you're up against and then adjust your strategy.
Talked about the game being played over various levels, and we've talked about that. Are there varying difficulty levels as well, like you would see in an original Civ? Like, you might go through X number of levels, but perhaps if you're playing on, say, an Emperor or a Deity.
Certainly as the game progresses, the levels get harder and harder. And by harder, we mean your opponents have more technology, and they have more, say, starting resources and, you know, all the various things you can do to make the AI more challenging. We also have difficulty settings for the game, which dictate the way they're laid out, basically how many resources your opponent will have during the course of the game to make it a little bit more difficult for you as the player. So there's three levels of difficulty, easy, medium, hard. If you find the game too easy at easy, you can ramp up the challenge.
There's also the boss encounters.
That's right. Well, when you get at the end of each stage, or each era, we call them, when you're fighting the Roman cities and you're fighting against Rome, when you play the Rome level, it's ramped up exponentially more than the previous cities, so it's a real challenge to get by what we call these boss levels.
Again, as a battle between two civilizations and two cities between them, there seems little room or reason for map types, sizes, and terrain within them. But yet the game's description notes managing resources, such as mining and farming, and acquiring new resources. The animation you provided also notes the destruction of an enemy fort. What can you tell us, then, about World of Two Cities maps, their types, sizes, resources, terrain improvements, etc.? From some screenshot backgrounds, it seems to be flatlands, forests, and mountainous terrains, at least.
The area between the two cities does contain terrain. Terrain in the game being forests and hills. This terrain is actually generated dynamically, so the maps will be different each time you play.
Good.
And both the terrain and forests and hills affect gameplay in a very real way, mostly by forests, for example, slowing down certain types of armies. Infantry, for instance, moves slowly through forests, as do horsemen. Certain technologies can mitigate this, such as roads, which allow you to move faster through forests. The hills do much the same thing. Moving uphill slows down your troops. So if you know you've got a lot of hills between you and your foe, you might pick technologies to help mitigate that.
Or you could just start a new game so you don't have quite as many hills.
Yes, you could. That's what some people call cheating.
No.
What?
The earlier levels tend to have smaller battlefields, a shorter distance between the opposing cities. More advanced, they tend to be much larger, more extensive, so you really have to work your way across the terrain. That's a lot of challenge, trying to take a lot more territory and control it.
It also means you have to make decisions to have effect much later. If you build an army now, send it across the board, it's not going to have an impact for 10, 15 seconds later. Whereas a shorter map, you have more instant reaction action.
Oh.
Another kind of cool feature of the forest is that you can actually destroy forests with your catapult or your more advanced version of the catapult of later technology. So if your opponent, let's say, has some really good technology to take advantage of forests to give the advantage, maybe you just simply do a deforestation policy and wipe out the forests and mitigate or negate that advantage.
Are games in War of Two Cities human versus an artificial intelligence? Can they be human versus human? Can they be both? Although presumably not simultaneously, seeing as how you're talking about two cities, two civilizations at a time.
It's human versus AI, and we made that decision basically so that we could get a product out to market as quickly as possible. We are looking at solutions for making future versions, human versus human. So this particular one, it's just against the AI.
I think that's more than fair enough, considering, as you said, there's only been one Civ title on the mobile phone to this point, and and it had its, shall we say, difficulties.
Working as quickly as possible. And
so we'll be looking forward to interviewing you about War of Two Cities 2 coming in 2009.
There you go.
Excellent.
This one is a really cool question. Civilizations, or societies, as the official description puts it, includes the Romans and the Japanese. From some screenshots, we can add Americans to that list. What other civs are in the game?
There's a fourth civ, which is the Russian. This is in a time period set during roughly the Napoleonic times. The American civ is used in our modern time. The Japanese is sort of our medieval civilization, and the Romans, of course, being the ancient civilization.
Oh, that's cool. That way they're kind of organized by era that the civ dominated upon.
That's right, and it gives the players a sense of progression through the time as you play the game.
Each of the four civilizations is described as having its own advantages. From one screenshot, we learn that the Japanese start with bronze and roads and benefit from cheaper mobile units, but have more expensive range ones. What more can you tell us about these advantages, and are there, for example, any civilization-based unique units?
The other civilizations, like, for instance, the Romans, start off with free technology. They start off with one level of technology in each of the three tech trees. The other civilizations have similar advantages, like the Russian civilization. Their infantry units are cheaper to build.
They can throw 20 million.
That's right. So they can throw lots of guys at you. There are no unique units per se. We do have some unique looks to the units, depending as you're advancing to the different eras. Obviously, the Russian infantry will look much different than the Roman infantry from ages past. Each civilization will have its own unique looking units.
What's the advantage of the Americans?
American advantage would answer that, wouldn't you?
The bonus tech, that sort of stage.
That's right, that's right. The American advantage is that every fourth time they get to pick that technology, they get to pick two technologies, so they tend to advance quicker in the game.
I wanted to just mention how much I like the graphics of this game from the screenshots. They call back to an earlier era of side-scrolling games, like King Arthur's World or Humans or Lemmings. How was the graphical development of a 2D side-scrolling game in an era of all 3D games? How did that go for you guys?
Tony, we're all too young here to remember those games. No, but I think Lemmings is a classic for anyone who remembers it. It was a classic game, great game. And those kinds of games showed how you could get some wonderful gameplay without having to have snazzy 3D graphics. And on these cell phones, you can't have snazzy 3D graphics regardless. So part of the trick is trying to convey the feel, the mood, the gameplay using, kind of simple, elegant graphics opposed to a lot of flash.
That's just the challenge of the platform that we developed for. There's a huge demand out there for mobile games, and a lot of, like, really hardcore gamers don't necessarily understand what a huge market that it is. So we want to make sure that the gamers that want Sid Meier's titles and they want some of these classic games brought to their hands so that they get that. So the challenge for us always is, as far as graphic goes, is how can we make these graphics engaging? How can we make them true to at least reflect the core fundamentals of the game, but still be able to get it down into that pint size that fits on the handset? So it's always a challenge, but I definitely think the Floodgate guys did an excellent job on this, and I think the guys at Oasis were pretty happy with it.
I agree.
One of the advantages of doing Civilization is that, you know, the people who are fans of that series, they really want the gameplay. And they're not looking for the flashy graphics. So if you can deliver the gameplay, I think that's mostly what they want. So you don't have the burden of having to try to do, you know, these snazzy graphics like you might if you were doing a shooter or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. Is there one or more leaders possible for each civilization? Do we get into, for example, leaders having any individual traits? Or from one screenshot, there are two Julius Caesars engaged in combat, where one is blue and the other is red, and you had mentioned earlier about how you've got the blue and the red civilization.
When the player starts each campaign of the game, he sort of picks which civilization he'd like to play, with the caveat that if you were to pick, say, the Americans, you start off in the Roman times, you're not as beefed up as the Americans you'll find later in the campaign. You have to sort of build yourself up. But the player does pick one of the four civilizations, so, and then he faces off in the campaign against the four different civilizations, so he will end up fighting himself more. Sort of. He fights as a, he plays American.
The evil, evil twin version.
The evil twin. the goatee version of himself.
The pretender.
Yeah. Oh, we have Star Trek fans out there, do we?
What? Never heard of the show.
I definitely caught that Star Trek alliteration.
I think they want to be back on the show, Tony.
We shall see no more of this.
Infantry, ranged, and siege units are alluded to in the official description, and we've talked about them in passing somewhat already. Flem asks how combat between units is handled, including siege. From the animation you've provided, there seems to be a power bar associated with siege weapons that at least determines how far a projectile is launched, we think?
Actually, the projectile mechanic is separate from the army mechanic. Basically, we allow the players to fire projectiles across the board at the enemy city. It's a part of the strategy of the game is sort of balancing your unit creation with building up the resources to fire this projectile. And it's sort of an abstract way of doing siege warfare. You can also use the projectile to attack enemy units as they march across the board. To answer the first part of your question, how do units interact with each other? We basically categorize all units into three classes. There's an infantry, there's a ranged unit, and there's a mobile unit, a cavalry unit. How these units interact with each other is almost like a paper, rock, scissors. Mobile units beat infantry and ranged units. Ranged units have the chance to beat any other unit based on a percentage, and infantry beats ranged units. Now, this simple interaction can be influenced by the technology you build. For instance, there's one technology you can take, its name's escaped me at the moment, but it allows your infantry to defeat enemy mobile units if you're inside woods, bringing more importance to the terrain of the board as well. And the ranged units basically can fire a ranged projectile. In the early eras, it's an arrow, you know, bowman. Later times, it's riflemen. They fire their projectiles at units who are approaching them, and they have a chance to hit. This chance to hit can then be changed by the technology you take. Can be increased. If the ranged unit hits, it kills the enemy unit. If not, the ranged unit's probably going to bite it.
Tony, you mentioned Lemmings a little ago. That was actually one of the inspirations for some of these mechanics. Lemmings always had a great mechanic where the Lemmings would be moving across the playfield on their own kind of volition, and if you didn't protect them or set things up for them, they'd, you know, die. And so it was about seeing their path and anticipating what to do. And Civ War of Two Seas has a similar kind of dynamic with these units marching across the board. So let's say you send an infantry unit to march across the battlefield. It may have a long ways to go. It may take it a minute to cross that battlefield. If you don't protect it in some way, the enemy troops will probably just crush it. So, you know, you can try to protect it by using your, say, catapult to destroy, say, an oncoming cavalry unit. Enemy cavalry is about to trounce it, or there's other methods to do it. But there's a lot of sort of looking ahead and saying, okay, my units as they're marching across the board, they're going to face these other enemy units. What do I do about it? How can I counter that? Because the way you win a level is if you get any of your units in infantry or any units to the doorstep of the enemy city, they take it. And so it's a very simple way to end the game. But it's sometimes very difficult to get that enemy, to get your unit to the doorstep of the city.
So from that, confirm then, there's no concept of capturing units, for example, like capturing siege units?
No, you don't. The units fight if they meet each other in the battlefield, and one dies. They can push against each other. You can have these sort of battles where you have three infantry pushing against four other infantry, and almost like a scrimmage or a scrum, a rugby scrum kind of thing. Which can be important with the flag that shows the territory. The infantry are the only units that can move the flag. And so the way to gain more territory is the infantry units, which tend to be the most vulnerable in general, but they're the ones that can push your borders forward. So you want to send out a bunch of your infantry guys. As soon as they get to that flag, they'll pick it up and start marching forward, you know, not that fast, but they'll slowly march forward with it and gain you more territory. If the enemy sends, say, another infantry guy and they meet, they'll battle each other, but often they'll be pushing one way or the other. If you have more infantry on your side than the enemy, like in a scrum, you'll still keep on moving forward, which can be a big advantage. But ultimately, they just kill each other off. There's no capturing. There's no, we don't have prisoner of war.
I'm kind of curious, and this is related to the question. There seems to be green bars and orange bars on the top of the screens between the two leaders in the graphics, suggesting lots of ideas in my mind. But what are all these bars, and what do they represent in the game?
Well, the green bar, which is the top bar, represents your food levels, how much food your city is taking in. This is increased by the more farms you have within your border. Food is used to build all your units. So some units are more expensive than other units. For instance, the mobile units tend to be the most expensive units. So when you build a mobile unit, your bar will deplete by a significant amount, and then you have to wait for it to increase enough if you want to build another mobile unit. Infantry tends to be relatively cheap, and you build lots of them quickly. The orange bar represents your income of ore or mining resources. And this is used to fire your siege weapons from your city towards the enemy city or towards enemy units. The more mines you have, the faster that bar will fill, and the more often you can fire your catapult.
Cool.
Oh, okay. So if you were not one for using a lot of siege units, for example, you just decide, oh, I'm going to stick to ranged and infantry, then you would probably want to, for example, prioritize capturing farms as opposed to mines.
Right. If your strategy or the technology you've taken sort of emphasizes you building your army units versus firing your siege weapon, then that's right. You would maybe fire your siege weapon every now and then, but you put more emphasis on building your army units to capture land.
It is a real-time game, and so there is hand-eye coordination comes into play with the siege weapon in particular. There's a mechanic where you are ready to launch a flaming stone at your enemy. You select the power you want to sling it at, and also the angle you want to fire it off at. You can choose anywhere from almost flat angle to about a 66-degree angle, steepest angle. And so between the power and the angle, it's like some of these artillery games. You know, you have to hit it just right to nail a particular point on the battlefield. But also some of the technology upgrades give you projectiles that have a much wider range of damage. So, you know, if you're not great with hand-eye coordination, you can upgrade those techs, and that will give you spreading napalm to hit a lot of guys. So there's a trade-off there. But partly making it a real-time game gives you, the advantage of, for mobile gamers who want something that's a little more action-oriented, gives you those elements.
In another screenshot, the one with the two Caesars, no less, there is a more progress-looking-like bar that's shown with a marker on it. What is that bar, or is that related to something you already talked about?
Yeah, that bar is the firing mechanism for your siege weapon. I don't have that picture in front of me, but it sounds like that bar is the one you use to pick the power of the shot. As Paul mentioned previously, both pick the power of the shot and the angle of the shot to determine how far across the battlefield your shot travels. That picture is the power meter.
Okay.
I think that this question might have been answered, but for any of the diehard fans of air and water-based units, are there any water or air-based units in War of Two Cities, and are they ever planned?
We do not have those types of units in the game. Whether they would be in a future release,
it could be
determined.
Oh, it would be cool, I think. I think it would be cool to have lakes and airplanes, but there's only so much you can fit on that tiny screen, yet.
Phones are getting better all the time.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we're always looking ahead in the mobile industry and seeing, what new handsets are coming out, what we can do, what old stuff is being sunsetted and dropped off the list that we need to develop for. So there's always newer and better and greater things that we can do with the technology, on a yearly basis even, just faster than almost any other part of the industry moves.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@apolitan.net.
For more information on Polycast,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolitan.net.
Now we're talking about some meat and potatoes. I was thinking, like, will I ask him this next question, or should I keep him out? And here's the question on the list. So there are a number of carriers that have or will have War of Two Cities available to subscribers. What does someone have in terms of cellular hardware and subscription plan in order to meet the minimum requirements to play? What are the purchasing options and limitations? And how will these carriers be chosen, and why the staggered release schedule?
The game is available on most of the hardware that the carriers have. With each of the carriers, we have a minimum number of handsets that we have to port the game to. And so those go down pretty low. So we have this game available even for phones that have like little 128 by 128 screens. And then we have much larger builds that go up to like 240 by 320. That's one of the challenges of this industry, is that really the key to the whole industry is to get porting right. With most areas of the game industry, you really only have a platform that you have to make a game for, say, like the PS3. And when you make a game for the PS3, you know it's going to run the same on everybody's PS3. With the mobile industry, each of the phones that we port to is essentially its own platform. And so a lot of the work that we put into this goes into making sure that this is going to run on all of those handsets. In terms of, you know, subscription plans, you just need to make sure that you have a data plan as part of your subscription. Purchasing options and limitations.
Well, with some of our games we're able to do, you either purchase it outright, and
yes,
so that game is always available on your phone. Anytime you want to play it, you purchase a copy of it, basically. There's also a subscription-based way to get games on your mobile phone. So what you do is you pay a smaller fee per month, and then you're not necessarily, quote-unquote, married to the product. You know, you can play it for a couple of months, and then when you're ready to move on to Sid Meier's Railroad Tycoon or something like that, then
War of Two Cities 2,
you change your subscription over to the new game.
In terms of how are the carriers chosen, we try to target the carriers that we sell the most games on, and we try to release for those carriers first. Verizon is really the top network where we sell the most games. We're going to try to get this on as many networks as we possibly can. And in terms of a staggered release schedule, you know, a lot of that really comes down to the order in which we port these builds, and also how quickly the carriers can just get them on their decks. There are some pretty stringent testing standards that we have to meet. Part of it is in how quickly they can deploy the product.
But that's also a good thing for the gamers that are out there, because there are standards of quality. So, you know, for the most part, when you see Sid Meier's, it's not like we're just taking the name and slapping the game together. The carriers have to approve that, okay, this, you know, meets a certain standard before they're going to put it out there. So every carrier has their own process for that. The good news for you guys is, wherever you are, when it gets to you, you know Sid Meier's Civilization is going to be a quality product.
Kind of on that same topic is that I think it might be worth noting that we have to go through an approval process with 2K and with Firaxis. We send the game over to Firaxis, and they spend a lot of time with it, and they take the Civilization name and the Sid Meier name very, very seriously, and you can't just put any game out there.
It's already been released on Verizon. Well, eventually, as it's getting rolled out on these carriers, will it be available outside of the United States?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Oasis has relationships with all the major carriers in North America, and even a lot of carriers that are outside of the U.S., so we're constantly building partnerships with new companies overseas, and so hopefully fans that are out there in Europe and Asia and whatnot will be able to get their hands on it eventually.
Can you save games?
Oh, good question.
In War of Two Cities?
During the campaign play, you can save the game between levels. You finish a level and you quit out it, close your phone or whatever, and the next time you start, you'll start where you left off. In the middle of the game, we don't save, but you have to remember that these games last between 5 and 10 minutes, so you haven't lost a lot of real time. You have to get on the bus in the middle of the game or whatever.
Or your mom calls you.
Or someone calls you, that's right.
Most mobile phones, if you receive a phone call while you're playing the game, it will suspend the game for you until you're done with the phone call, and then it will give you the option to go back into the game. So if you receive a phone call while you're just about to beat Rome, it's not like you've wasted your efforts. You should get a resume screen where you can go back in and start playing. And that's a handset-specific issue, but for the most part, that shouldn't be an issue for the Sim fans out there.
Instead, you can just answer your phone and you can say, "Excuse me, but I was about to conquer Rome. What is your problem?"
Nice.
Can you save more than one game? Like, could you have a couple of games going on at once and then you could load in between them afterwards? Or will you just save the most recent game that you've been playing?
It'll just save the most recent.
Okay. Is there also a way, if you, for example, to save your game, if you wanted to, at some point, share it? Is there a way to share games? I realize they're really short, so you can only save the most recent one, but is there a way to share between...
Yeah, there is a way to share. You can hand your phone to another person. But there's no way to send your save files to another phone. Actually, probably a carrier restriction.
Yeah. Okay.
We constantly explore all these types of things you guys can do on the PC that are great features. Probably several times a year, we sit down and we say, okay, what of these can we now implement into the new technology that we've got? So the industry's constantly rolling forward, and hopefully when you guys see more of CCDs too, you guys will see more and more of these features implemented. So it's always going to be a process, and we're firm believers in this brand.
Could you pause the game and then use it to, say, scroll over and have a look at things, or does it just totally freeze it, if you know what I mean?
If you pause, it freezes the game.
Dan's trying to cheat again.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to implement all sorts of features to prevent Dan cheating.
What advice would you give someone looking to get into the gaming industry as a career, like myself? What backgrounds would be advantageous in terms of education, skills, and experience?
Well, guys, that is a really broad question. I think you could ask anybody who's in the game industry and get a different answer to that one. For me, I mean, it was just, I love to do it and I wanted to get into it, so I needed to take a step out there and do it and get started where I could. You know, I started in QA and worked my way up from being a quality assurance tester to being a producer. So I guess if you're just out there doing it as a hobby, you're doing modding and that type of stuff, like, my best advice is to make it as high quality as you can, do it for free until somebody will pay you to do it.
Nice.
QA is a really good way to get in the game industry. A lot of people start out the QA.
Well, see, I'm actually a modder, and I do the modcasts, so that would be my angle.
There you go. And knowing people.
Well, now I know you guys.
Yeah, there you go.
So other than perhaps this special, have any of you listened to Polycast in the past?
We're huge fans. Huge, huge fans.
Now that you're on the show, were you huge fans before you were on the show?
I have not listened to Polycast.
I know that we do have some of the guys that are coders at our place that listen in and are big fans of the Civ community and all that. So some of them have probably played your mods there, Tony, so...
Oh, so some people have played some of Tony's mods, but no one's listened to Polycast. I see.
Aww.
Oh, Tony.
Okay, everyone give Dan a hug. Right now, internet has
Would you be willing to appear on the show again?
We'd love to appear on the show again. Appear? Yeah, can you do that?
Yeah, I think you can appear in voice. It's like a disembodied voice appearing in there.
You have to have higher quality refreshments.
Oh, come on my show, too.
So, I guess that brings us to, is there anything about Civilization IV, War of Two Cities, or otherwise you want to touch upon that we haven't already?
Play it.
Yeah. Play it. The reason why we're on here is because you got people that actively look into what the fan communities are interested in and all that type of stuff. So play it and put your feedback out there and let us know what you want to see in the next one.
Tony, can your cell phone support War of Two Cities?
Well, my old cell phone couldn't, but it got broken by my kit. So now I've got a shiny, tiny little phone There's a cool graphic, so I think it will, but my carrier, on the other hand, I have a weak carrier. I'm not, like, cool with Verizon and stuff.
What carrier
but,
do you
have? I have Cricket.
Aha, Cricket. Yes.
Don't forget about us poor people.
we'll be on Cricket eventually.
Oh, well, that's the music to my ears.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, Tony, I hear both Oasis and Floodgate are going to chip in to get you another phone on a carrier that has the game, so you can review it. Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
Documented. Oh, that would be cool.
I'm good at giving away other people's money.
Dan, you are.
Actually, you're really just good at promising other people's money. You're not giving anything away, right?
Well, thank you once again, gentlemen, for being on this Polycast special to tell us about Civilization IV, War of Two Cities. Rick, Paul, Scott, Jason, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, yeah, me too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, and thanks for being here too, Tony, I guess.
All right, let's see
right
here. She
was. No, you can stay on. Just don't break into your, you know, everything about it. I'm just like swearing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I could ask Jason what he does at Floodgate.
Actually, I'm at Oasis Mobile.
This question number 10 here, based on what you already. Hello.
Sorry about that.
There's my phone.
The industry's constantly rolling forward, and hopefully when you guys see Tale of Two Cities 2, you guys will see War of Two Cities 2, you guys will see a ton of these. Listen, you can fix that in post.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah, or not.
get together.
Yeah.
Send us free and exclusive biddies.
I called dibs also.
March 10th, 2008. Sound clips copyright Civilization IV, The Warlords, and the Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.